like one season down, it was like, oh, I could see it in the season before. I thought, oh, you know, this is, we stayed in the Premiership only just about, and then it just started to slide. And yeah, and you can't do enough. Once that slip starts, it's, you couldn't get out of it. So, you know, some couple of seasons where we finished seventh, we would always take us after, just after Christmas, he'd take us to Moxham Hall for a week on the piss, right? And it'd be like, and I'd be like, we don't need to go for a week on the piss. No, we need to just, because we are, I think one year we were like third in the Premiership and went to Moxham Hall and we'd never won a game once we got back there. We'd be on a piss, so we never won a game the rest of the season. And we finished seventh. I'm thinking, well, if we hadn't been on a piss, we'd have.
This is why we finished seventh, because.
So it looks absolutely great, but I'm pretty sure we could have finished higher than that. And they could have, you know, the club could have put me on the contract. The manager, they could have just said, we've put him on a contract. Just let him train me. I'd have forced my way into the team. Wouldn't have been an issue. The manager, you know, I'm pretty sure he's gone. Yeah, we'll stick him in. He's good enough. He's better than what we've got. And I kind of blame the club a bit. Yeah, the manager's just doing his, wanted to bring his player in. Yes, you know, he brought, no disrespect to foreigners, but they brought him in and Championship's a bloody tough place to play. And they just couldn't cut the mustard, so to speak. Playing the Premiership. Who doesn't want to? For me, it's the best league in the world. I played against some of the best players.
In the best era.
Rube Van Nistelrooy, Robin Van Persie, Dennis Burke. I played against these players. When I was 18, I played against Eric Cantona. What's going on here? I just literally signed for Cambridge. Well, I'd been a year at Cambridge. It was my second season. And they had a pre-season against Man United. All those players, Brian McClair, Mark Hughes, like Eric Cantona. And I'm thinking, this is pretty weird. I'm like just 19. A year ago, I was doing my A-levels down in Bournemouth. And here I am playing against Eric Cantona. And there's my mum having a photo with me.
In the game.
Yeah, that was a bit of a shock. And that took a while to get over. As a player, I'm not a player. Just sit at home. And I just can't sit there and just be sad for, I just couldn't do it. I went back training after a week, whether it was the right thing or wrong thing. I went and did it. I needed to just go back to training. I went back to training after a week and it was like great for me. My wife came and to the training ground every day.
Have a minute, mate.
And everyone just stuck by me and I think my first game back was against Cambridge United, ironically.
Before we get into this, we're doing over 1 million engagements a month, but most of you aren't subscribed. If you enjoy the content, hit subscribe and follow us on socials. It'll make such a massive difference. Cheers.
Morning, Jodo. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Good to
be here. We're rolling. We're all ready to go. We're down here at St Andrews. We had a chat when you come in. You haven't been down there since you've played. What are your memories of here?
A few years ago. So, I've headed about 2 million football, so I actually don't remember a lot. But I did score it. I think that's probably, you know, that stands out because I scored. I think it was a 1-1. You know, I think we scraped that. That's kind of my last memory of being here. And it was a good memory because I don't score many times as a centre half. So, to score was great. And we got a result. It kind of, like I said, did we deserve it? I don't know, but we got it. So it was a bit of a, kind of a few moment like, we got away with that one. So,
do you remember the atmosphere down here? Steve has been on and said it was horrible, but he loved it because he excelled in it. It's meant to be one of the worst grounds for to kind of come and play at.
It was all right. Like, as we spoke before, I said, like, Wolves West Brom is, you know, pretty hostile. It's quite spicy out there, but it was never a Wolves West Brom, just like it was never wouldn't be a Blues Villa. So, you know, it was, yes, it's a bit spicy, but it's not too bad. And but the first time I ever came to this ground, I must have been about 8 years old. And we came with this, I think it was the school brought us to watch Blues versus Millwall.
Brilliant.
And I don't know if you will remember when the game got cancelled and everyone was chucking seats on the pitch.
That's a good school. That's first school trip
memory of coming to the stadium.
Why?
It was absolute. My mate, I think my mate was about 8, 9 years old. He got punched in the face. Punched in the face. So it was brutal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was... that's why he'd become a blues fan.
Yeah.
He just got the school just in theatre trips after that.
Yeah. It was Shakespeare evermore after that.
What football team did you support, Graham?
I supported Liverpool growing up. It was either Liverpool, Man United, and that was it. So Liverpool supported Man United, so I supported Liverpool. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. Can't argue with that. So 750 professional appearances. We were talking about your goals before. You said in school, many 27 goals season in the Prem with Wolves. I think you had five, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you scored a few. How did football start for you?
I started later. I started at 18. I wanted to be a footballer. Who doesn't want to be a footballer? That's your dream as a kid. So I wanted to be a footballer, but I wasn't good enough until I started to kind of develop a bit more. So at the age of 17, I was playing men's football. I play Saturday afternoon for a team called Christchurch in the Duke and Wessex League. And that was a bit of a semi-pro. So, you know, I was starting to kind of play with, you know, men's football, which brought my game on. I played pub football Sunday morning and under-18s on a Sunday afternoon. I'd gone for trials at Bournemouth. Tony Pudis was there and they spotted me and said, right, come and have a few games. Not with the first thing, but to see if I'd get into the academy. So this was literally just before Christchurch. And I did all right and I played a couple of games and for the academy and they said, right, we'll sign you on. And I said, okay, let me just finish my A-levels. I've got my A-levels to finish. I've got, you know, I've already been doing my A-levels. So yeah, I didn't want to just chuck that all in because I didn't particularly think I was good enough to be a footballer. So I thought, right, I do need to get my A-levels just in case. And I said, okay, great, just give us a ring as soon as you've finished and we'll get you down here for the rest of the kind of academy course. And I rang them up and they're like, who? And I'm like, okay, well, okay. So they kind of forgot about me. And so then I just carried on playing my local teams. And like I said, the three games at the weekend. And I think I just have some, the word gets around, you're a young lad playing centre half. It kind of stands out a little bit more just because you don't get that many younger lads playing in that position. So a few scouts came down and Cambridge was the one that, you know, took the punt and ran it and said, come and have a try.
So what was Cambridge like?
Good. Loved it. Young lad. Kind of new world.
Lovely part of the world.
Yeah, beautiful part of the world. So met some great lads there. We just felt like being at school with your mates, but playing football and not having to do any homework and not having to do any nothing, but just being with your mates. And that's what it felt like. It was brilliant. I absolutely loved it. It weren't about money because I was on absolute pennies and couldn't afford a thing. It was just about loving football and playing it. And I'd just turn up every day and think, well, and then I'd have a day off on a Wednesday. I think, well, why are you having a day off? And why are you having a day off for? You know, and I think I don't deserve a day off. I've done anything. So, I just go and kick the ball against the wall at the back of the stadium for hours on end. I just do that. I just loved it. So, Cambridge was great. Got some great mates there. Yeah, and it brought me on. Kerry Johnson took me there, brought my game on. I went out and learned on the first season to Woking, which was great. And I just slowly worked my way into the team. And, I think I became the captain by the time my fourth year came around and, moved on from there.
When did you start for actually feeling, okay, I'm going to make it? Because even then you just said at Cambridge, you were like,
I just think even when I went to Sunderland, I did a course of fitness and nutrition at Cambridge. And then I did another one, a sports psychology course. And then I did my coaching badges. I did up to my B license. I don't know. I just always thought, this could just fall apart in a second. I've seen it fall apart in seconds for players with injuries and not being good enough and just slipping out of the game. So I just thought, I just need to get at least do something. Use the PFA, they would fund the courses for me. So I just think, well, I just use that to my advantage. And whilst I've got that time on the coach or after training, I just do a course and get it under my belt.
Super sensible, isn't it, for being that age.
From what parents did when you were younger, they get a tried or get a proper job or make sure you got something to fall
back on. No, not particularly. My parents were just happy for me to do whatever I wanted to do. So it's just kind of, they weren't sports inclined whatsoever. So how the hell I become a footballer, I just do not know. I just think it was just a different scenario then, wasn't it? We didn't have computers. We didn't have phones. If I had a computer and a phone, I wouldn't have been a footballer. I'd have had nothing probably. But Yeah, so I'd just be out with my mates all day, every day, just with the football or American football or cricket ball, you know, just doing sports every single day. And this went on for, you know, I did this until I literally signed for Cambridge. I'd even at 16, 17, I'd go and play squash or badminton, just doing something all the time because there's nothing else to do. So it was sports. So you kind of then, you know, yeah. I can play basketball, I can play tennis, I can play squash, I can kind of do, you know, do it all. I enjoy it all.
Yeah. Yes. It reminds me of when we had John McCarthy on air, and he was of a similar mindset, wasn't he? That he was mindful that he needed to get this education and stuff. And the similar thing, really, he had kind of what he called imposter syndrome, where he thought, what am I doing? What are they seeing? And so, but I think that's important now, and it's being kind of rammed home to the kids now to be that way, because it's easier to not be that way these days.
It's really hard for them because it's like, bright lights and money, and it's like, wow, I don't need to do anything now. I'm going to be a footballer, and 10 years or 20 years is so far away, I don't need to worry about it. And it just can, well, 20 years, I might have had a 20-year career, which is, players don't, you know, not many players reach a 20-year career. So, you know, it falls, you need something to back it up. And, you know, it's, if you've got a wise head on you, then it's sensible to do that. But I do understand the flip side of the coin where,
there's a lot more money now, isn't there, at the youth end of the especially around the Premier League.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like I said, I was at Cambridge, I was on pennies, I was on about six, started off, I was, after my digs came out of my wages, I was on about 60 quid a week, and it was like, I'm ringing the missus, I'm 50, money's about to run out, I've got 50p left, money's about to run out, you know, I was doing that for years. So,
and was it kind of the YTS mold that you've got to go and do jobs and you've got to do?
But no, because I didn't. I was 18, wasn't I? Oh, so I didn't do the YTS. So I signed just as first year pro. But they were doing, you know, they were. So some of those YTS are just doing their second year YTS. I became good friends with. So, and they were still doing those roles. So sweeping up changing rooms, they'd go and clean up the stadium after a game, and it was great. And then they'd clean boots, and they needed to do that. And yeah. Everything's wrapped in cotton wool now. They don't do anything. So, yeah. Which is a shame because, you know, come Christmas, we give them a tip. You know, that's how it works. And, you know, the bigger the player, the bigger your tip you get, isn't it? So, you know, which I thought was really good for the kids. It gave them a understanding of, you know, it's not just turn up and play football. You've got a little bit of responsibility and they understand the process. But that's
all. Being in and around you guys, it comes across as it was super important at the time, whereas now there's complexes for the 21s, there's complex for the 18s, and everyone's kind of away from each other, whereas then you're rubbing shoulders and you're...
Yeah, you think, what shape? What shape? So then it makes it easier for them when they make that transition of kind of academy or first year pro to come and train with the first team or, you know, or the main squad.
Yeah.
It's bridged that gap because you've been speaking to them all season because they've been cleaning your boots or you know, they're just in and around the place, which is really good. But yes, I don't think you there isn't that anymore, is it? There's no kind of, you know, they don't work together and it's kind of kept separate. So then when they do step into that role of having to train with the first team, then it's like, wow,
a huge gulf.
It's like a punishment as well, isn't it, for like recouping all players that are 4, 9, 5 first team to train with the under 21s as well.
Yeah,
so where that should be something that's a massive like lift for the kids. It's kind of, they're going down, they're trying them 21s. It's always like you're falling out of the manager trying with the 21s, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. We had never had 21s when we, you know, when I played.
Just reserves.
Kind of, yeah, reserves, which I thought was brilliant. I don't understand the concept of a 21s team. I think if I'm 21 and I ain't knocking on the door and in that first team, then this club ain't for me. I need to be at a club where I'm, you know. So at that age, I need to be in the first team, not playing under 21s, which... Unless you're 18 playing in under 21s, it's completely different there. If I'm 21 playing in 21s, then I'm at the wrong place. But the reserves I thought was brilliant because you'd have players, experienced players. Well, like we played against Liverpool, and I'm sure Steven Gerrard came back from an injury. So it gave players, which were young lads, which play in a reserve team, the opportunity to play against such a massive player like that and to play alongside kind of more experienced pros from, you know, our team, which helped their game. But, you know, that's...
I think the reason now, personally, is because the loan, the way of loans is so, it's so expensive and you can make a lot of money from the loans, can't you? So if you've got these kids then under 21s, then and you want to loan them out. It's monopolising, and Chelsea done it, didn't they? And Liverpool do it. And I think it's more of a farming exercise for the kids.
Yeah, and it's a shame.
And trying to get them into the first team.
And I needed to play. If I got an injury, I needed to play in the reserves like for three or four games to get back up to speed. I could not just go straight back into the first team. I expect to be the same as I was just before I got before I got injured. I needed to get, catch up with the speed of the game. So it took two or three games for me personally. So, I can't imagine I'm the only person that was like that. So the reserves was brilliant. We were up at Sunderland. It was like a Premiership reserve team, Premiership League of reserves. And, we're playing Liverpool, Man United. We played Man United at Sunderland to win that reserve league. And there was like 15,000 fans at the game. It was like absolutely brilliant. And, that's how good it was.
So tell us then how the move to Sunderland came about.
Yeah, I was 4 years at Cambridge. And I just stepped. I just progressed. I think I became the captain. And that was it. I think I went back on the pre-season of my fifth season. And they were like, oh, Sunderland, I want you to go up and have a trial. I went up, had a trial for 2 weeks. And then I went back to Cambridge to train as usual and carry on. And then I got a phone call saying, they're going to sit on you.
And what was the kind of the time between going up and then just kind of going to play the band?
Literally about a week, and then that was it. They had a pre-season friendly, Cambridge did. I thought, right, I'll sit and watch this. And I literally, half-time, jumped in my car and drove up to Sunderland and never turned back. It was a bit crazy, really.
Was it Peter Reid that signed you?
Yeah, Peter Reid, yeah.
What's he like? He's always coming.
He's exactly as you think he is. Yeah. So, he gave him an opportunity. He was brilliant. It was him and Bobby Saxton. So Bobby Saxton would do all the kind of talking. He'd be the hand on your shoulder and Peter Reid would be the,
To be honest.
Yeah, exactly. So, but fantastic. And they, I had some great times up there. And we did. We had some, finished seventh twice in the Premiership. And
because was that a promotion of 105 points?
Yeah.
Makes boxes. The Blues got lauded for 111 last year, didn't they? Which was League One, which doesn't really amount. So I don't really see how it's comparable to the Championship or anything like that.
Mm.
105, so that was, and the football you played as well.
Some good players, people say, who's the best player you play with? And it wasn't a player, it was two players. It was Kev Phillips and Niall Quinn. Yeah, they were phenomenal up there. Quinn is so good, it's ridiculous. You think, he's just a big lad that heads the ball, but his touch was phenomenal. Everything about him, and then Kev won the Golden Boot, and everything he touched literally went in the back of the net. And couldn't he be like, right, this is where I put the ball for you, just score. And they did. And they were, you don't get that now, like a partnership, which works so well. And their partnership was phenomenal. So, it was a privilege to be in that team. And someday, when we were like flying high in the Premiership, I literally sit at the back going, this is so easy. I'm just going to win my headers, win my tackles. There you go. Alex Ray, Kevin Ball, there's Abbott, there you go and play football. And I'll just...
Kevin Ball in play as well,
isn't it? Oh, it's hard as nails. Every team needs a Kevin Ball, but we had a Kevin Ball and an Alex Ray. And Alex Ray was hard as nails as well. So to have both of them in the same team was... and that's why we did so well. So just absolute...
Well, Quinn and Phillips, it's then emulated, wasn't it, throughout the years then? It was the mould, wasn't it? It was the mould of which to play off.
I think you're over on second favourite team at that point as well. So it was so refreshing.
It was attractive football, wasn't it? And it was that you were like the good guys of obviously going up then. You were upsetting people, weren't you, in that Premier League season?
It was good. We're doing really well and... some couple of seasons where we finished seventh, we would always take us after Christmas. He'd take us to Moxham Hall for a week on the piss, right? And they'd be like, and I'd be like, we don't need to go for a week on the piss. No, we need to just, because we are, I think 1 year we were like third in the Premiership and went to Moxham Hall and we'd never won a game once we got back there. We'd be on the piss, so we never won a game the rest of the season. And we finished seventh. I'm thinking, well, if we hadn't been on the piss, we'd have.
This is why we finished seventh, because
so it looks absolutely great, but I'm pretty sure we could have finished higher than that.
Or won the French.
It's completely changed now. That wouldn't happen anymore. So
who were the characters in that side? Who were the Alex Ray, obviously.
Yeah, Alex Ray.
I bet a couple of them boys could
see you away as well.
They liked a Guinness. Quinny loved the Guinness. Yeah. Kev Phillips, obviously. Then you'd have Nicky Summerbee, he was Mickey Gregg, Chris Making, who do I play at the back alongside? Oh, Daz Williams, he's a younger lad, so he was quality. Tommy Sorensen in goal. So yeah, we had a good set, a good bunch of lads.
Mm.
Yeah.
We was talking about this the other day to someone that Mickey Gray, every time you mention Mickey Gray, and he says it on TalkSport, doesn't he?
Penalty.
It's that penalty, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's mad how things stick. I'm not even a Sunderland fan or I'm not got any affinity, but it's just moments that stick out for you throughout life, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he says he's had to live with that, hasn't he, for
yes, yeah.
forever. But in the grand scheme of things, it didn't really matter, did it?
It didn't. Like, no, it didn't. And I think maybe I always think back, I don't think we were quite ready anyway to go into the Premiership. So maybe it would been a blessing in disguise, because the following year we absolutely stormed the league and then we went up and did pretty well in the Premiership. So
yeah,
you know, we probably weren't quite ready. So
yeah.
Because that's what happened with Derby, weren't it? The year when they set that record,
yeah,
Billy Dives, victim of their own success, weren't they? Because they shouldn't have really gone up.
Yeah.
And they did, and they were not equipped for it at all. And now they carry that,
yeah,
that record, that, don't they?
Yeah, that's so, horrible moniker. Yeah.
The Wolves have only just avoided. So how did the move then to Wolves come about from?
Tenuous link, I like that. Did you like that? I like it, yeah.
Yeah, how did it come about?
Yeah.
Well, we were...
Did you go out on loan when you were at Sunderland?
You went... Yes, I went to Sheffield United on loan.
Yeah, you popped out on loan.
Yeah, I went for...
Did you know then that it was... You weren't in and around, or what?
I was only a young boy, so I was only maybe my 6 years at Sunderland, so in my last second season. So I was only a young lad, so I wasn't expecting to be in the first team. So to go out on loan, I'd obviously played in that reserve team, and it was Adrian Heath that ran the team, and he obviously really liked me as a player. So and he would then went and managed Sheffield United. So he was like, right,
coming on,
get me there. And I had a month, and then Stan Vargo was centre half, got injured at the Wolves, and then I came in, and that was it. I played like 4 years after that, and I never turned back, and that was it. That was
just like sliding doors, mate. Yeah, so exactly. That was my point. It's just like,
Wait for it to happen there.
Yeah.
So that's how.
When did you get the call about Wolves?
Sunderland got, we were getting relegated, and Mick McCarthy came in like a couple of months just for the end of the season. Yeah, and they just, same with every Premiership team, they have to get rid of a few players. I wasn't like I was a player on loads of money at all, because that wasn't the case. But obviously, your Quinn's Lee Kip Phillips would have been on, you know, better paid than I was. So it wasn't like they were getting me off the books because I was on that money. I just think they were, you know, which someone's come in and they wanted a player, and
would you have just kind of got your head down and played again in the Championship and gone again?
Love Sunderland.
You're not
like never. I was never thinking, right, we need to get away from here. But Wolves knocks on the door, so I'm thinking, right, okay, this is an opportunity to stay in the Premiership, which, you know, makes perfect sense as a player. So,
and also less than an hour from my house.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a bit of a circle. So yeah, I had family in the Midlands, so you know, it kind of made sense. But I've always said I'd have happily stayed at Sunderland for the rest of my career. It was never an issue. I wasn't a player that I was always looking for a move and wanted to go.
Knocking on the door.
Yeah, that's why I've only ever had three clubs in my whole career. So for me to stay there would have been absolutely fine. I would have loved it there. I did love it there, and I would have happily stayed there. But and to move on, and you know, it was a bit of a circle. Come back down to the Midlands was stay in the Premiership, because that's where you want to play, son.
So even before we go to Wolves then, so with all the success that you had, and then all of a sudden that success starts to ebb away, and you see the form kind of over time, you're starting to look down rather than up. How does that, what's the reasoning for that time with Sunderland, do you think? What was the catalyst to...
Yeah, it's always a tough one. It just, something doesn't click. A couple of different, Peter Reid got the sack, different players come in, they didn't quite work, you know, and it's not, you know, nothing against them. They just, if they get brought in, they don't work, it doesn't work. It's as simple as that. So then the finger gets pointed at Peter Reid for, you know, you've brought in, say, Nicolas Medina, you pay $7 million for him, and yet he's hardly even played, you know, spent any time on the pitch. And Quinny got an injury, so he was difficult to replace. So then you kind of lose that partnership with
Phillips. If you take one of those cogs.
Yeah. So it just, you know, I don't know. It was like a gradual slide. So it wasn't like one season down. It was like, oh, I could see it in the season before. I thought, oh, you know, we stayed in the Premiership only just about, and then it just started to slide. And and you can't do enough. Once that slip starts, you couldn't get out of it. So
you tend to find that, don't you? Like with West Ham now, it's not a shock thing, is it? That, oh no, it's a bad season. It is. You see, it happens, a pattern, isn't there?
Yeah, gradually.
It seems to be. Yeah. Once you kind of hit that funk over a couple of seasons, it's only going to end up. My Tottenham are probably looking at West Ham or a season ahead of them.
Yeah, exactly. And it's about, you know, it's tough for a manager because you've got to find some gems. And, you know, he brought in, Peter Reed brought in Julio Arce, and he was a gem. He was quality. And, you know, so then he's, you know, you're looking for the next Julio Arce as well. So he brings in Nicolas Medina, and he, you know, unfortunately, he wasn't the next Julio Arce. So, you know, sitting and chasing somebody else and looking for another player, you know.
But all his scouting suggests that is the player we need, and then it just doesn't work out.
So then you're in like a Milton Nunes who didn't work, and, you know, every time you shoot and miss, it becomes another kind of, you know, thorn in the side, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So then you start to slip. But if you can find a gem, like Min McCarthy did at the Wolves, you'd find gems like Michael Keightley and Matt Jarvis and, you know, Ali Keogh. You find these gems and they all gel together, you end up being phenomenal. So
yeah. It happens to, I mean, going back, it happened to Cov and Southampton, teams like that, that they're constantly just missing the cut, aren't they? And
yeah.
And then the players must just think, well, here we go again, kind of thing. And yeah. I think it's not even a mentality thing, is it? Sometimes you just have to, like you say, one player can turn it. You just mentioned, like Jarvis and Keightley were just like amazing, weren't they?
Yeah, and we got Sylvain Ebanks-Blake as well. He signed him from Charlton. And, you know, people say, who's the best player you play with at Wolves? And I'm like, wow, it was Sylvain, and it was for one season. It was that season we got promoted into the Championship. He was absolutely phenomenal.
Didn't he score a few against, I think he used to love
Netflix. You know, if he could have done that his whole career, he'd have been like unbelievable, where he did it for, you know, one season at the Wolves, and he was phenomenal. And he picked up a couple of injuries after that and really struggled to kind of get back to that form. But and he was another absolute gem that...
He was a handful as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
So who was it that signed you for Wolves?
Dave Jones signed me at Wolves. So yeah, I knew they were interested, and I was waiting on they played Sheffield United in the playoff final. I was just waiting on a result of that. If they got promoted, then yes, they'd be signing me. And if they didn't get promoted, obviously they wouldn't be signing me. So I was watching that one on telly with a great
interest. Carried a bit of interest for you.
So they got promoted and I signed. Simple as that. So yeah, and then I had 10 years at the Wolves.
And then you said Mick was back in.
Mick came back in, yeah.
What's Mick McCarthy like as the manager?
Great. I've always said he's my, you know, no disrespect to any other manager I've been there. They've all been great, but Mick was, you know, he'd been a centre half. He kind of understood me. He was, helped my game. And I think a few players have said that about Mick. That's, he's been their favourite player to be coached by.
You watched that film yet?
No. I don't know if two or not. I don't know if it'll be
true. I haven't watched it either. So
I don't know. I probably won't, but...
I can imagine that them two as characters, it's just...
I saw one of his clip from one of his after sporting dinner speeches, where he said, just look at it. The size difference is completely wrong between the two actors. So if that doesn't look in any way, it doesn't represent Roy Keane to me. But it must be a weird thing to kind of have something come out like that without any kind of input from you, but it's about you.
Oh, didn't even have any input? Huh? Oh, I thought you... Oh. Well, there you go. See, I won't watch it because I don't know the ins and outs of what actually happened. So then if I go and watch that film, then I'll be thinking, well, that's what happened. And that's not, you know, it probably isn't what happened. So
no.
So no, I won't be watching it.
No. Who's the, Championship and Prem, you've played against some players. Who's the toughest striker that you've faced, or who's that give you a nightmare? And
well, so in the Prem, there was always... Thierry Henry was quality, wasn't he? So
I can imagine.
How do you even mark him when he's dropping off? And
well, he used to play in behind the back four. So we play in that offside position. You have to be really brave and you have to step up because he wants you to keep dropping back. So, you know, but you can't. You've got to stay up. And he wants to just... he's really tight. He'll run along the line and cut in. So not only is he rapid,
you've got to be watertight.
So you know he's coming back out, and then you're in a foot race with him when he does. You've got to come back on.
So you've got to be really brave and kind of with and have a good relationship with your partner so you can deal with that. But on the flip side of the coin, I played against a lad at Plymouth called Rory Fallon, who was a nightmare to play against. Go down to Plymouth pre-season, it'd be about 35 degrees. This skin doesn't like it, trust me. And I'd have him just literally wanting to batter me for the whole game. And he's always stands out as one of the, like a really tough, awkward centre forward to play against. So, so that's the flip side.
Elbows and
yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he just want to kind of kick the crap out of me for 90 minutes. But yeah.
But then ironically, didn't Kev then kind of haunt Wolves with every other club around the Midlands for the next 10 years of his life?
Pretty much so, yeah. I think he scored against the Wolves a few times, didn't he?
He scored twice, didn't he, for Blues?
Yeah.
And we turned it around. And I remember Mick McCarthy's interview afterwards where he said, oh, what do you think about Kevin Foos? He said, I'm not going to blow smoke up his arse. We all know he's a good player.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I had the privilege to play alongside him, and then he haunted me for the rest of my career after that. So,
so training with him at Sunderland didn't really help.
No, he's just a quality player. Playing against these smaller lads was always really, you know, when you play against a big lad, I was up and I was battling and it was great, and I could get, you know, little lads just
a low centre of gravity.
Awkward because they're not hitting the ball up in the air, because he ain't going to, when the header gets me, so they're not going to put it up in the air. So they're going to fire into his feet, and now it's like a different type of game you have to deal with. So
he could score from anywhere as
well. Yeah, he could. He wasn't just in the box centre forward. He would smack one off outside the box as well.
How would you get on nowadays with the whole pass it out from the goal kick, get the touch on it, how was your touch?
All right, it had to be, to an extent. That's why I worked so hard at Cambridge. So it was okay. It kind of got me through my career. I was never pinpointing passes through, splitting midfields. But I could do enough just to, I was a workhorse. I would just give 110%. Win on my headers, win on my tackles. When I was younger, I was quick. So that kind of really, that went hand in hand. Yeah. By the time you end of your latter half of your career comes around, the pacing matters so much because you're more experienced. So you understood of where to be. When I was younger and I was fast, it didn't matter. I was out of position because I could get back and cover myself. But when you're older, more experienced. So then it didn't really matter either then. So yeah, I'd just get it out of the back and just, there you go. You give it to the players that can play football, don't you? So it didn't make much difference. Providing, if you play out from the back, you need midfielders which are really confident, which will pick up the space and come and get the ball, or you give it to your fullbacks, give it to your midfielders. So, so playing out for the back's easy if you've got the right players in front of you that want the ball. So,
It's so frustrating sometimes, though, for us as fans that we went through a stage where obviously it was widely known about the amount of managers we had and the amount of styles we had, but you're asking players who were not them players, weren't they, to bring it out and pass it around, and you concede most of your goals then from goal kicks because you're just on the press. And
I seen Man City play a FA Cup game a few years ago. I can't even think who they played, but it was a team from a lower division, like a couple of divisions lower. And the team were trying to play out from the back against Man City, and they just got ripped apart. I'm thinking,
just lumpy.
Yeah,
nothing wrong with a lump, is that?
Lumps are there. The Sam Allardyce explanation at Baltimore, it's not a long ball. It's being played into an area where you can be offensive. Why wouldn't you put it into a pocket where you've got a quick winger and put the pressure then on the defenders?
Oh, there's nothing wrong with a long ball if it's put in the right, put in the right position.
Playing in the right areas,
Just a lump up to a big centre half is no good because you're going to love that and run it all day. But
there's more than one way to play, isn't there?
Definitely. It's a kind of balance. It's a balance of, if it needs to go, it goes. And, if there's a problem, you talk about it, in the change room. Or if you can pass and you've got the room to, if you've got a team that's pushing you and pressing you and pressing you, it's really difficult then to you've got to be careful playing out from the back.
And again, going back to Quinn and Phillips, the ball was put that ball in that area
because he won every single header, so it was.
So are you going to say that's not the way to play? But you absolutely,
so we did because it works so well. But then we also had Mickey Gray. We had such good kind of fullbacks, left and right midfielders, and they'd link up really well. So Mickey Gray would link up with. So he played on the left. So it would be Alan Johnson, and those two linked up so well. He was brilliant. So then you'd have Chris Makin and Nicky Summerby on the right side. So, they had such a great partnership that
definitely still
not only could you
jump down the wings,
and if could we go straight out to Quinny's head, that we could just, there you go, boys. So we had the alternate as well, which was great. So, and then we'd press and press and press when we didn't have the ball. And I think that's why we did so well for a couple of years in the Premiership, is our press was quite, but it looked good,
So with Wolves, 10 years. So you had a testimonial as well. You were in and out. What's reading through your Wikipedia, there were times when you were out of the team, but then you came back because you were injured, weren't you?
Yeah, a couple of times. Nothing major though.
Broke your foot.
Yeah, that was that was when we got the promotion season. So we started the season, broke my foot in the first day of the season, just my metatarsal. Yeah, and that kept me out for longer than I wanted to be out. And I think I came back in. The team started off great, and it just started to. I came back in and around like November, October, November time. The team were just having a bit of a blip and struggling a little bit, and which. Not great for tea, but for me, is trying to get back in. One thing I need to get back in this team. Yeah, I got back in. I think then I don't know. Being an older player, it just kind of settled us a bit, and we went on and got promoted. So, you know, we had a good run from there, and promotion was the reward at the end of the season.
Any sniff of internationals around when you were?
When I was at Sunderland, possibly they had a beat. England had a beating, didn't they?
Yeah.
And. Me and Des Williams were centre half at Sunderland doing well, and I think we had a sniff, and I pulled me out, literally pulled me out and string the week before that, and Des went and played for the B team, and that was kind of the closest I got, and it never materialised again after that.
You were in an era of ridiculous centre halves, though, weren't you, at the time? Yeah. So it's, I reckon it was super hard to get in, but at the time with your form, what do you say?
Yeah.
But so it's was,
I was close, but just never opened, which was a shame.
So just one for the one for the Blues fans while we're sitting down here. We talked briefly before about the season. We were in a relegation battle. We played down here. Craig Gardner was sent off for a second booking for diving. The hands of your challenge.
I tell you, yeah, go on.
Pin this one on you. But that season, so you stayed up that season. So what's kind of the contrast between promotion and relegation, kind of survival versus the elation of promotion? Where do you sit? What's more
kind promotional of survival? Footage? Yeah,
they from the Prem specifically.
Yeah. Well, we stayed in the Prem 1 year, and we played Blackburn the last game of the season. Yeah, it was on the balance. We could be last game of the season. It was either relegation or staying in the Premiership, and we could hear the fans what was going on with the score and all the scores that go. Right in the other team for the other teams as well, so we could hear the chat fans like, and then we were like 2-0 down at half. I think we were 2-0 down at half time or something, and then second half we could hear the fans all cheering. So whoever was near us or needed to let in a goal or something had let in a goal, and so all our fans were buzzing, and we got back to 2-1. So goal difference was good for us. So we just needed that better goal difference. So Blackburn were like. Without saying, if we keep the ball at this end and win the game and you just sit off and let us do it. And so it's the most surreal thing I've ever experienced in my whole career. We literally stood at those 10 minutes. I just stood there. And Blackburn just passed the ball back and forth for 10 minutes or 5 minutes. It felt like 10 minutes, but it was probably minutes. And they won the game, but we stayed in the Premiership. And it was like, yes.
I know, an unspoken thing.
Yeah, it was a bit. Yes, it's odd. You're just staying in the Premiership, but that was like it was a massive thing to just stay in the Premiership, and that felt like being winning the championship. It felt the same. The fans were on the pitch. It was phenomenal. We stayed in the Premiership, which was every team's ambition. If you're getting promoted, that's where you need to stay because that's where the big bucks is, and that's where you.
That's where the eyes are, isn't it? Yeah. I suppose you can be like, okay, let's go again. Let's. Do different things next season.
Surreal end to the season, but you lose a game, but it was we stayed in the Premiership.
Yeah,
you didn't score many then, but a recurring theme is whether it's Blues ex players or West Brom or whoever comes on, everyone seems to score against the Villa. Have you remember your goal against the Villa?
I do.
Talk us through that.
Who crossed it? I can't remember who crossed it. I might could have been Jarvis that crossed it. It come in a box, and I think. Who's in front of me? I can't think of a centre half who's in front of me. And he missed it. He's trying to hit it and missed it. And it's just back. Come down at the front. I've just swung my left foot and it's just gone straight in. I think it's brilliant. And that was quite early on in the game. So, I'll never forget it.
Excellent. We'll clip that up. Villa fans.
Definitely clip that up. Yeah, they think that we've got nothing against them, but we're not. It's just the stories come out of the Villa. Not that we feed you that. Do you know what I mean?
Everyone's got a goal against Villa.
Yeah. So throughout your career, you've had to deal with some really difficult personal challenges. And again, at the time, it was massive.
Yeah.
And reading through again, just for the research for this, it's tragic what happened to your son.
Yeah.
Do you want to go into that just a little bit more? And
well, there was two times. So the first time was Sunderland, where I lost my son Jake to cot death. That was really, really tough. And everyone was fantastic. Sunderland fans were fantastic. So to go for anyone to go for, not just me as a footballer. Yeah, that was a bit of a shock, and that took a while to get over. But it, as a player, I'm not a player. Just sit at home and I just can't sit there and just be sad for. I just couldn't do it. I went back training after a week, whether it was the right thing or wrong thing. I went and did it. I needed to just go back to training. I went back to training after a week, and it was like great for me. My wife came and to the training ground every day.
Have a minute, mate.
Yeah, and everyone just stuck by me, and I think my first game back was against Cambridge United, ironically. So they made me captain for that game, and it was just great to be back playing, because how do you deal with a tough time like that? So I dealt with it by just carry on. I think that's just my nature of how I do things. Just carry on. Just I can't stop and start thinking. I just had to just get on with it and get through it as quick as I could, because it's I don't need it to.
I remember the football world was just stick with the awareness about it, though. In it made everyone. I don't know. It was just a really nice touch from the football world, and even us as Blues fans seeing it.
Oh, brilliant.
We had no affinity to it, but you just like, what would happen? You just think, what would happen if it was us?
How do you deal? There's way to deal with it. How do you deal with it? Yeah.
Is that when you lean back into art? Is that when?
It was. I just would then sit in the lounge and paint, selfishly just sit in the lounge and paint. And it just meant I could just blank my mind out, not forget, but just blank and just focus on something else, and just and that kind of, that's where it then I started to push on from there with the art. But yeah, it's always been a way to trying to switch off and albeit selfishly, because I'm painting and I'm switching off, and my wife's still grieving, and so
you've got to find your own way.
You do. So that's how I dealt with it, and I think
just so happens that you are absolutely amazing at art as well.
The more I did, the better I became. So like football, the more I did, the better I became. But live art, the more I did, the better I became. So
was that one of your A levels that you'd?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I did A level art and geology, so I can paint rocks, and that's about it. I said there was two things.
If that weren't bad enough.
Yeah, then Toby got leukemia, which was really tough as well, but. He's absolutely brilliant now, and
he's great.
He's fantastic. So, that was a happy ending, which was great. So, but
you carry on playing football through that.
Well, that was at the end. That was literally the end of my career. My last season for Bulls, Mick McCarthy got the sack. Solbakken came in. And Toby had leukemia. Was literally in the hospital for months on end. So it wasn't an option for me to go somewhere else. It just wouldn't practically work. I didn't want to go anywhere else. It was either Wolves or nowhere. I was still fit enough to play. I mean, tests had been brilliant, and Solbakken was just like, no, I don't want you. So he just literally, I've been there 10 years, he just got rid of me, and brought another lad in, who never even played, who wasn't good enough. So, which was a bitter way to end my career, but I just couldn't go anywhere else. Toby had leukemia, I just couldn't.
Was you balancing that with training then, boy?
I was, but I did it and it worked. It wasn't like I was missing training. It happened at the end of the season. So it was, and I was injured, but, and then in the off season, still kept fit, and I still was down in the hospital. So it kind of worked. It wasn't a matter of, I was in the hospital with Toad for days on end, and I couldn't go training. Now I'd still be training. Chile be at the hospital. I'd go straight over to the hospital. It wouldn't be an issue. I could still deal with that. So it didn't affect the football. But if I was to move club, it would have, because I wouldn't. Yeah. Toby was in Birmingham Children's Hospital. Now I couldn't have If I'd have moved across the country, I would have just won the work.
So, unless it was, yeah, someone like Walsall or Blues. Or
I did that work with the club then. So I'd seen previously from your interviews regarding Solbakken and the way you were treated. How did that work then to kind of with the testimonial and the relationship with the club?
I always had a good relationship with the club. And they offered, yeah, they just rang me up and said, look, we'd like to offer you a testimonial. And, you know, simple as that. Yeah.
So they were ahead of mine, Granger, they didn't actually pay for it.
So, yeah. So
did he have a chat with you? Did he pull you and have a chat with you? Or was it just a phone call, Solbakken?
No, I went in the first day of training. I went into the first day of training. Like I said, I was as fit as I was 30. How old was I at that point? 37. I was as fit as I'd ever been. You do all your VO2 tests before you go back that first day. My tests were as good as I'd ever been. So there was no doubt of fitness and nothing. I was more than fit enough to play. And I would have helped the team that year. Maybe I wouldn't have played every game, but I'd a good portion of that season. I just went in that first day. I just went in and said, look, my son's in hospital. If you're going to... They were going on pre-season at the weekend to, I think it might have been Ireland or River. And I said, look, if you ain't going to give me a fair crack of the whip, there's what's the point of me coming? He'd already said at the end of the season, because he'd come in to see the lads, he said, look, yeah, come back pre-season, I'll give you a trial. I'm thinking, trial, I've been here 9 years now, I'm having a trial. So I went in that day and I said, look, you know, my son's in hospital, so, you know, where do I stand? Because I'm not going to Ireland if you ain't going to sign me. He went, no, I'm not signing you. I went, all right. Then I just literally walked out and that was it. End of my career. I got in the car and drove home. I have Jez Moxie ringing me saying, what's going on? Why are you leaving me? But I'm saying, are you kidding me? He just literally got rid of me. They could have, club could have signed me for pennies. I mean, you know, not as in, the club put me on a contract for a year for like £90 a week, just to say I'm a, you know, to get me to 10 years so you can have your testimonial. But they could have made me the, you know, a sensible, lowest paid player in the team without a shadow. That I would have took it. It wouldn't have been an issue. I would have helped them out. They got relegated from the championship that year. I would have helped them out. It would have, you know.
Well, even just to have you around, yeah.
Well, what's that like as well? Because we've had Roger Johnson on, obviously Blues hero, not so much at Wolves.
Yeah.
Well, he went in on big money, didn't he, to Wolves?
Yeah.
And what's it like then where you can't get in the team or you've got players on big money underperforming and you know you got Wolves at heart, you could step in and do a...
Yeah, frustrating. Yeah, because I'm at home watching it and I'm thinking, I could have helped this team out. I really could have. And they just slipped and slipped and slipped and you could see what was happening. I'm thinking I could have helped them out and they could have, you know, the club could have put me on the contract. The manager, they could have just said, we've put them on a contract. Just let him train me. I'd have forced my way into the team. Wouldn't have been an issue. The manager, you know, I'm pretty sure he'd gone, yeah, we'll stick him in. He's good enough. He's better than what we've got. And I kind of blame the club a bit. Yeah, the manager's just doing his, wanted to bring his player in. Yes, you know, he brought, no disrespect to foreigners, but they brought him in and championships are bloody tough place to play. And they just couldn't cut the mustard, so to speak. And, but the club could have signed me.
Okay, because Jez Moxie, that's him. He was the Mr. Wolf.
He put the strings. They could have put me on a contract and just said, look, he's your player for a year. Mm. If you don't want to play him, don't play him. But I'm pretty sure I would have been involved.
Again, with your licenses and stuff, looking back, I would imagine that you would be someone who would be in the club, a bit like Bully, like just kind of being in and around, you know what I mean? And kind of with the service that you've given.
Yeah, it never happened. It was
mad, isn't it?
I kind of walked out the door. It never happened. They never said, oh, look, you know, do you want to come and coach the academy? We'll do something. Just never happened. I don't, you know. So, yeah, one of them, isn't it? So then I went into my art and I thought, right, okay, I'll, nothing's on the table in terms of football. So I'll go into my art.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll have a
good link as well.
Yeah.
Tell us about your art.
Yeah. Well,
I've seen it on Insta, class.
Yeah. I've done it as A level, you know. I wasn't great. I just scraped my A level. I got there about a D and A level. And then when I went to Cambridge, I couldn't afford anything. So it was just pencil and paper, do a few sketches. When I went to Sunderland, I had a bit more money and a bit more time. So I self-taught myself, you know, oil painting. I used to watch Bob Ross. Everyone knows Bob Ross. Yeah. If you've got AI on your phone now, you know about Bob Ross. So I used to watch him and think, I can do that. And I thought I couldn't do it. I literally couldn't do it. But I thought, right, I'd teach myself to do it. And I'd just go home after training.
Where was more of a Tony Hart guy?
Marlo, yeah, I watched Tenny as well.
No, I used to like Bob Ross.
Yeah. You
tried to paint them forests with him or even just draw them, you'd be like, hang on.
And
it was pausing.
There's no.
I watched every episode every single day, like half hour episodes, weren't they? I think, yeah, I can do this. I think it was, I couldn't. It was so hard. It was such a mess when I tried it. If you didn't buy his paints and his brushes, you couldn't do it. But then I spent years, thought, well, I'm going to crack this. So I literally taught myself everything, you know, watercolors. I paint with oil paint. So I literally taught myself everything. So
how do you go from a quite lot doing this to someone sees it? What was the process between someone, for you just painting for yourself, someone seeing it, and then you're flogging them? You've sold a couple of pieces to Mick McCarthy at the time, haven't you?
Yeah, that was it. So when I lost Jake, I painted, literally sat in the lounge and painted. And I think I had a Paul Kerr, who's my financial advisor. He literally came over to see me and went, hey, these are really good. You know, you need to do something with this. I'd never done it to sell or anything. I just did it as a hobby. And he went, I'll ring someone. You need to go on, like, I think it was like Up North, it was called up there, the program. Just went on there, showed my paintings, and kind of slowly went from there. And as I got better at painting, and the lads brought a couple, and I've come like a million miles since, you know, the quality back then.
Well, now you've hit this kind of niche, haven't you? Where it's cards and showed us the card. I don't know if you've still got the cards there, if we can.
Yeah.
Cards.
So this is just something I'm doing at the moment. Trading cards are crazy. Yeah, people buy bits. And I bought them myself. They're crazy. So I thought, right, but, you know, I'll paint on one and see what response it gets, and people love them, you know, especially, well, it is Sunderland fans, yeah. So I've done them for the Bulls fans and Sunderland. Now it's Sunderland, at the moment it's Sunderland fans. So, you know, I'm in a Sunderland card trading group, and, you know, they're great people, because all Sunderland supporters. So, you know, I'm chatting with them, and when I've done one, I show them, and they're buying them. So great, but, you know. Yeah, that isn't my main stuff. I've done all kinds of different stuff. I've had a main kind of range of stuff, which I take to art fairs. It's just been a lot of football stuff over the last 5 or 6 months, because I've done the Jota pieces at the Molyneux, which were pretty special. So I kind of come from.
How does that come about, a lot of the Jota stuff?
They just contacted me, you know, after Jota and Andre lost their lives. They contacted me because they'd had a ton of flowers that were left outside the stadium, and they got flowers and they turned them into paints, basically. So into a black and a gold paint, and said, look, we've got these paints. We'd like you to do a painting for us, a tribute to them, which we can put up in a Stan Cullis stand. And, you know, so these paintings are big, like they're really big. So I'm like, great, you know, what an honor for me to do that.
So it's quite surreal that the kind of, even the full circle movement of Liga and not being offered another contract, and now you're back there, working in a completely different field than we are.
You know, I did pictures for them years ago, which they have all up the stairs, gone up to the museum. I did the program covers for them, so I've always had that link with them. I've never held it against them. The way that ended, I love the Wolves. I still go to the games when I can. To have that link with them is really nice, because, you know, the museum are great. The museum put my work up in there. So, you know, they want to work with me. They want to keep that bond and that relationship, which is great, because then it helps me, you know, sell my artwork, which, you know, it's a bloody tough world to be in. And I wouldn't recommend becoming an artist if you want to.
One of the bits that I was looking at before you came on was the Sun article a couple of years ago. I think it was 2018. You painted the burgers, and you were showing how teaching your lad to paint.
I'm teaching my son to paint, yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a couple of years ago. So I'd sit with him. So he's 22 now. So he was 9 years old at the time. And he was quite into it, quite arty, quite into it. But to get a 9-year-old to sit there with you and paint for hours, it just wouldn't work. So he'd be like running in the lounge watching Ben 10 and kids. And I'm like, this is hard work, you know. But we'd sit there for hours on end, and we just literally, I'd do a bit and he'd be copying me, and it was as simple as that. And when it got to really tough bits, I'd just help him out a little bit. Yeah. And even his sold ears, he was selling ears. Every time he'd do one, he'd just sell it, 150 quid, 150 quid. He wouldn't even be bothered about paints. He just wanted the money.
You're like, anyone want one of mine?
Yeah, you want to buy my one, please.
I've done most of that.
Yeah,
exactly. He takes all the money. He's like, cheers, Dad.
He'd be selling it. We turned up at someone's house in near us, and they bought a painting. They was like, so good, I'm just going to pay you more money. I'm like, what? No one's ever done that. Give you more money because they liked it so much. But yeah, so he didn't become an artist. He became a jeweler. So he's an absolute phenomenal jeweler. He works at Hockley Mint in Birmingham. And yeah, he makes his own jewelry and does all that. So so there was an artistic side to him, which then went into, you know, obviously painting wasn't his thing. But yeah, the jewelry side was his thing. So yeah, he's a fantastic, fantastic jeweler. So
that's and a he's a thing though, even being able to get, you get, especially now with iPads are an absolute disease, YouTube and iPads for small kids. Be able to get them to sit down and do something.
Yeah.
There's no concentration levels. I've got kids of my own.
No, it's hard. And so if you can imagine trying to get a lad to do a painting, an oil painting.
Yeah, just listening to you saying that, then I'm picturing my head and absolutely.
But why don't you try that with Jackson? Just sitting down and doing oil painting. You're wearing it.
I've been buying stuff in 2 minutes
strong. He did it. We did a burger, which he sold. We did a wolf, which he sold. We did.
What else? Yeah, I saw those.
We did a few, which. Oh, we did a John Lennon, and they would look so good. I'm looking at my phone thinking, it's virtually as good as my one light, so.
Begrudgingly.
Yeah. And if he'd have stuck with it, he would have been selling them for fortunes now, because they'd have been buying, you know.
Does he do it on the side? Does he have a go on the side? Is this completely?
Didn't like it. No, didn't like it one bit.
Yeah.
All he wanted was the money from it, so, which was great at the time for him. But
what's the main aim for you with the arse? Because you've exhibited already, haven't you? So
yeah.
What's the ceiling on what you want to do and where you want to go with it?
Just to keep selling, it's really important that I keep selling. It's not, I love painting. I just love to paint. So I have to keep painting and I have to keep selling them. You know, I'm not a painter where I think this is all I do. This is the only thing I'm going to paint. You know, if you don't buy it, you don't buy it. No, it's commercial. I do need to sell the work. So I have a couple of ranges, which, you know, people become interested in the football stuff. And they, you know, people who like my football stuff won't buy, I like do statues with graffiti on, so they won't buy that stuff. So I think there's a couple of different ranges, but I want to get to the point where literally, you know, the order book is stacked up and it's as simple as that, you know.
So would you do requests from other clubs or the fans?
Yeah, I do.
Or the fans can reach out to you.
Yeah, definitely, that's meetings. What they do. So they'll see these and then someone will go, oh, I'd really like, could you do this? I, you know, I've done, yeah. So I work on commissions as well, so, which is great. So every time I do something like the Jota piece and people see it and go, oh, I'd like, yeah, can you paint a picture of my son or my daughter or my family? And I'll do that. So yeah, I'll take on commissions and.
It's quite refreshing to see, because I see all the, like the bad drawing and not the deliberately jokey pictures that do quite well. It's nice to see some actual proper art that's appreciated.
Well, I kind of submitted, I tried to apply to be a Topps artist, because they have Topps artists. I'm looking at them thinking, some are good and there's some which I look at, I think, oh, you know, I could do better than
I
that.
I could come in and do better than that.
So I applied and you have to apply and you have to send. So you apply for, do you want to do Disney, Marvel, football, other sports, basketball, whatever. So if you want to apply for Disney, you'd send in four pictures, you know, four this size pictures for them to see. So I thought, right, I can do all of them. So I just sent in about 20 pictures and I got turned out. I'm like, okay, well, I think if these would look pretty good, you know, I don't know for sure I'm selling these. So why wouldn't you want to sell? I'm thinking, well, I have been the captain in the Premiership football team as well. That kind of goes.
Yeah, it's a nice thing. They'd be quite
sought after things. Well, no, it was a no. So I think.
Okay. Yeah, so now we've got a problem with Topps. So we'll prove them wrong.
Topps, what you think about even Panini? Come on, guys.
They're big fans of this podcast, I think, Topps and Panini. So
this is the last year Panini have got the license for.
Is it?
World Cup and that, isn't it?
Oh, okay. They've done it for years upon end, haven't they? Sticker books. Even I collected the sticker books.
First language we've been alive.
They stand on foilies. I'm not sure he's a foilie. We just call them foilies.
Oh, okay. There's so much different stuff. It's ridiculous. Like I said, I'm in this Sunderland card trading group, and the amount of stuff that's got, look, they're foils, they're kind of hologram. There's so many different cards. There's one of 50, one of 200, and I'm looking at these cards thinking, God, I'm like, that's such big business. It's ridiculous. You know, when we were kids, it was just the one card. Now it's like 10 versions of the one card. Now you can get, you know, obviously you get fans would go and get these cards signed at games, and they've even kind of managed to limit that now by putting, there's like a small like sticker they put on the front, and then the players sign it. So they've even managed to tap into that side of it. And
so you're not even damaging the car.
Yeah, so even the fans can't really, but they do go and get them signed, but it's now the Tops have even stepped onto that and taken on that under their wing as well, which is great. But so yeah, the amount of different cars, and you can buy the printing, the they use obviously metal printed plates for them. So you can get your hands on them.
What was the award show in America the other week? And the guy had it round his neck, and the sign, it's like $2.5 million.
Oh, that would have been that crazy. Pokemon cars. Yeah. So,
there's a lad from Birmingham who I met in the casino a couple of weeks ago, and he's a trader on it. And he was the guy. Did you ever see the darts player walking through? And he got him to open a pack as he was walking through.
Okay.
I didn't. The Kabuto of the World Darts.
Yeah, he was the guy that done that. But I've looked at his TikTok, and he's just, it's ridiculous. And
I see
some of the American stuff where they go into the pawn shops and stuff, and they're going over there, and it must just come up on my algorithm, mate, because I've seen them quite a lot recently. And they're going, this is worth $100,000. It's like a car.
It's crazy.
It's like $100,000 in like a plastic thing. And
utterly crazy. Mm. And I get it as well.
Yeah.
And it's once they're hooked in, they're like hooked in, and they're, you know, once they get a good card, they want another good card, and then, you know.
Well, the thing with yours, it's going to be limited edition. That yours is hand. It's not. There's no printing in there.
It's one of one. So they're quite popular, but you know, others might look at it and go, "Well, you've just defaced that. You've just drawn on that and defaced it." But
art is divisive.
Oh, exactly. So,
So looking back on everything you've experienced in football and life, what are you most proud of?
My family. It was always for the family. Yeah, so to sit down every day and have a meal with the boys and my family is massively, massively important. So that's my number one. This is what I'm proudest of. But yeah, becoming a footballer was a big thing. I always wanted to be a footballer. I didn't know how to become a footballer, how it worked, about cadres, any of that stuff. So to then kind of come to football the route I did, literally a lad that would play, you know, I'd jump on my bike and ride 5 miles to go and play for Christchurch every Saturday afternoon, and then go out and piss on a Saturday night. Yeah, I loved it. It was absolutely brilliant. But then to become that professional and forge a career for 20 years is, I'm massively proud of it, because I know looking at it now how difficult it is to get into the game, stay in the game, and forge a career and make some of it. You know, The money's at the top of these, you know, in a Premiership and a Championship, it's good money. You know, it gets harder the lower down you get. So I know how difficult it is to make money in the game, sustain, you know, try and sustain a life after football. And but then even harder for players even lower who have to juggle a job and play football. There's that balance. So then players don't go into football because, well, you know, I've got a job. If I grab this job, I've then got to travel, you know, from here to Manchester on a Tuesday night and play.
Throw missus and kids into the mix.
Exactly. It's really difficult, isn't it? So for me to go in, I know it was a bit different when I was 18, you know, I had a girlfriend who was my wife now. And you make it work. We didn't have kids at that young age, and you make it work. And it was never about the money. It was always about, I just loved playing football. So they're my two biggest things, you know. Being a dad and having a family and becoming a footballer and making it work, being a success.
It's like 1%, isn't it, that make it, but then you've made it. You not only made it, but you've made it at the elite level, and you won out of place. So finishing seventh in the Premier League twice at the promotions. So you didn't just make up the numbers, did you?
No. Exactly. It's about, playing the Premiership. Who doesn't want to? For me, it's the best league in the world. I played against some of the best players.
Again, in the best era. Yeah.
Ruud van Nistelrooy, Robin van Persie, Dennis Burke. I played against these players. When I was 18, I played against Eric Cantona. What is going on here? I just literally signed for Cambridge. Well, I've been a year at Cambridge. It was my second season. And they had a pre-season against Man United. All those players, Brian McClair, Mark Hughes, like Eric Cantona. And I'm thinking, this is pretty weird this is. I'm like just 19. A year ago, I was doing my A levels at down in Bournemouth, and here I am playing as Eric Cantona. And there's my mum having a photo with me.
In the game.
It's like, look, what's going on? Just nuts.
You mentioned some players there. Who was the dirtiest? Because you mentioned Van Nistelrooy and Shearer had the dark arts about him, didn't he?
Shearer was the dirtiest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've seen that down here.
Yeah, he was the dirtiest. He'd be trying to elbow me as I'm going up for a corner, you know, trying to win a header. He'd be elbowing me. And she kind of expected another.
Really clever with it though,
yeah,
weren't I?
Yeah. You wouldn't get away with any of it now.
We've seen it on Match of the Day. We've seen it on Match of the Day, didn't we? But until we've seen it down here, we're like,
Darren
Purse, he's filth.
He copped her up Darren Purse, didn't
he? He's filth, yeah.
But he was so good at it. He was always out of view of the officials, weren't he?
And you kind of like, well, that's the way you do it. That's the way you do it.
I was 18 for, almost 19 for Cambridge. I made my debut against Stockport. And they had Kevin Francis up front. So he's 6'8" and he's all late. And his partner was David Priest, must have been. I think he was 6'4" or 6'5". And I just remember thinking, okay, they rang me up the night before and says, oh, look, you know, so and so's injured. He's pulled out. You're going to have to play. I'm thinking, oh, shit. Yeah, what? This is, I'm like, great, cool.
Yeah.
There's my debut. And I'm thinking, how am I going to get on against this lady?
That's good news, bad news thing.
But I could header and I could tackle, and that's what I could do. And that's what I could do. That was my game. But he was so dirty. I remember I'm standing, it must have been a corner, or we're at the other end of the field. I'm literally stood behind him marking him.
Who's this?
Kev Francis. Yeah. And he's just gone. He's just tried to elbow me in the face as I'm stood there. I'm ducked underneath. I'm thinking, you fucker.
Thankfully, the saw is in it. I've just gone straight out of it.
He's probably too big. That's why he missed. Yeah.
Skims you.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you fucking like fancy trying to do that on me. But then,
Did you have a bit about you? I wouldn't go back on challenges.
Yeah. I just make, you know, if I needed to get my hand back on someone, I just made sure that they knew about it when I made a, you know, a tackle on him. Toe? Sorry, mate. You know,
generationally.
Yeah. So
Wolves.
So I wasn't stupid with it. I was sensible with it.
Yeah. Would have been kind of Muscat, Carl Emery, those players that were very visibly physical.
So I was never one that was, I was never dirty because I didn't, you know, I didn't want to be sent off and let the team down. That was my game. I was a team player. I needed to be in the team. I needed to play. So for me to be an idiot, it just wasn't the guy. I didn't handle it.
Seems to have like kind of nice temperament as well.
I did.
Like getting to know you now as well, and then kind of harking back to then.
And so no, I wasn't a lunatic on the pitch, but I could look after myself a bit really, you know, if I needed to. And you know, I just loved the tackle. Who didn't love a tackle if you're a centre half? So for me to go in a little bit strong on a tackle was nothing if someone had been giving me a bit of jip all game.
Yeah,
especially when the touch has got away from him a little bit. So you know you're going to win the ball and then you can leave.
Yeah, but you could go in for a proper tackle, couldn't you? Then it's a different. It's a now you do it now and it all gets pulled apart on VAR. It's like, oh, it's just
slow it down, frame by frame. Yeah. Everything looks dirty if you make it slow enough, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
So finally then, what advice would you give to both a kid who wants to be a footballer and or an artist, and kind of adding your little bit of kind of education into it, and just kind of summarise that for us?
Well, if you're going to be a footballer, you need to have a backup. So if you're a young lad going into football, I know it's difficult because the end is never in sight. But if you're going to go into football and you are in them, you manage to get into football, even as a pro on the first, second, third years, just to have a backup. Make sure you have something to fall on if you're to get injured and, you know, come out of the game, or you don't fulfill your potential and you don't become a footballer because you aren't good enough. It's, you know, that happens a lot to players and they drop down very, very quickly. Have a backup, just have something to fall back, you know, whatever it is, anything, but, you know, or even have an idea, just something that you can do when you finish. And for a young lad coming through, that he's trying to make it, is practice, practice, practice. That's the only piece of information you're going to need. If you want to be the best at something, or at least compete with people who are the best, then you need to practice and make sure you know, and don't give up, and just don't give up and keep going and keep practicing. Like I said, every day off at Cambridge, I go and just kick a ball at the back of the stand, just kick a ball, kick a ball, kick a ball. And it paid off because when I kicked, they had some food things, and they used to pull the the boards up and hook them onto the hook so people would buy the food on the match day. So I'd just hit, so these little hooks would hang down. So I'd be hitting these, I'd try and hit these hooks and I couldn't hit the hooks. So I'd hit these cupboards, these doors instead, and it loosened the bolts and these things so I could get under and get some food out. So I said, oh my God, I've got under, I'm absolutely starving. I'd slide under the cage and get some chocolate bars out. So if anyone from Cambridge is watching, I'm really sorry. So, so practice,
football, yeah,
feeds.
Exactly. Yeah.
On that bombshell.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for your time, mate.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, mate. I appreciate it.
If you like this video, please do click to subscribe to the channel. We currently have 5,500 members, over 500,000 views. So let's convert some views into memberships, and that will continue to enable us to bring great guests on and continue making great podcasts. Thanks.